Now, if you go back to quote 3, you'll see, again, a fundamental of Jewish marriage. I'll introduce it with a quick anecdote. When I was growing up in Muncie, I knew of a family. They were, Baruch Hashem, you know, they did very well financially, wonderful kids. They did gorgeously. Whenever they went on vacation, he went on vacation for a week, and she stayed home. And she went on vacation the next week while he was home. And it always struck me, I'm sure they had a very happy marriage, but it struck me that Hashem can sometimes give blessing, but some of that blessing is not being enjoyed together. And that's a flaw. That's an unfortunate thing about a relationship. You want to be able to enjoy those blessings together. And quote 3 is Rashi's commentary on the Sheva Brachos. You're familiar that there's 7 blessings which we recite in the presence of a chosen and kala when they get married. A number of them are blessings directly related to how they're going to conduct their marriage. So Rashi comments, the blessing that says, the one who causes the chosen and kala to rejoice is different than the blessing that says, the one who causes the chosen to rejoice with the kala. What's the difference? I'm in 3. The first blessing is not linked to the marriage. It's a prayer that they should have success and be provided for with food and all that is good. Later, we discuss the union of husband and wife in happiness. This is the joy of a husband with his wife. It's 2 different blessings. One blessing is you shouldn't be wanting of anything, and you, the spouse, shouldn't be wanting of anything. But the next blessing is, at least a few times a week, you should be zoche to eat supper together. It should happen, because we're looking that the Jewish marriage should become an us. And if you recall the analogy I gave last week, that in many societies they really view marriage as a financial partnership, and that the emotion and the sanctity is not recognized in secular law. It's a financial relationship. So then the first blessing would really satisfy that. Until now we had 2 dorm rooms we were paying for, and now we're able to unify into 1 apartment. We're doing well. But for the Jew, we're not satisfied with that. We want the second blessing, that the chosen should rejoice with the kala. How far does this go? How far do you have to try to be happy with whatever you're given? Take a look at quote 5. Rav Chiya's wife would pain him greatly. Rav Chiya, just you should understand who we're talking about, one of the greatest Jews in history. He is the author of the Braisa, the person who compiled what the Gemara often quotes when it wants to compare to a Mishnah. So Mishnah was codified by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and the Braisa, which is also quoted in the Talmud, was codified by Rav Chiya. So we're talking about a person who had students watching him. Rav Chiya's wife would pain him greatly. Nevertheless, when he found something that would be meaningful to her, he would put it in his cloak and he would bring it home for her. They asked him, "But she causes you such pain." He answered, "It is sufficient that women raise our children and save us from sin, and for that we have to be thankful." It's funny, he switches to the plural. It's clear that he was talking to his students and he was trying to explain something to them. He doesn't say, she raises my children and saves me. saves us. He's trying to teach them a lesson. Go home, even if your wife is like mine, you got to treat her nicely. The Stipler is well known that apparently, I think he had a garden in his front yard. He had access to flowers. I suspect it was his own garden. So he used to pick a flower here and there, and, you know, he can't walk in the street, you know, carrying his flowers. It didn't match the culture and his stature, and it wasn't, he didn't feel it was correct, but he would put it under his coat, and he would walk to his daughter, and, you know, when she had a rough night or whatever, you know, he would present her with a flower, and it meant a lot to her. And you have to know your culture. What is it that makes people tick, that makes people realize that they're appreciated? Again, even though his level of wealth, his level of happiness, he was a little bit hard-pressed, if you think about it. I mean, raises our children, it's her children too. Saves us from sin, you know, it's her benefit too. But he saw what he was getting from the relationship, and he appreciated it.
Rabbi, she's not really following what's in her, what her obligations are to him.
Beautiful, beautiful. So we have a great insight here. What happens if you read the paragraph that you're supposed to read, and you read the other person's paragraph, and you see it's not happening? So you'll know, especially from the law field, right? At the end of the document, it usually says that even if one person violates one clause, it doesn't mean that all the clauses are automatically invalid.
That's what the Palestinians said.
They still remain in force. I have other issues with the Palestinians, our beloved cousins.
But
there's nothing like a family feud.
Even though they didn't disarm, we still have to abide by our agreement.
All right.
But anyway.
Okay.
But I'm looking at that too, and I'm thinking, you know, the shoe could be on the other foot too. You know, whether it's a wife that's not fulfilling her obligations or a husband. And at what point are you obligated to the marriage? And at what point are you not? I mean, if, you know, how bad does the wife have to be for the husband not to be obligated, and vice versa? I mean, like, if you had a husband that was, like, really abusive to the wife, you know, and she's stuck with him. I mean,
Okay, so our general attitude is to figure out techniques to make the marriage work. That's the general approach. Are there cases where it's just not working, where one side is not cooperating? Of course there are cases. Careful. So Reb Chiya went the extra mile. We're not clear exactly what she used to do, but she used to pain him. There's a passage in the Talmud right before this one that actually very funny, where the woman used to serve the opposite of whatever the husband asked for. So one day, the son was frustrated on behalf of the father. You know, if the father asked for barley soup, so she sends out chicken soup. And if he asked for chicken soup, she sends out barley soup. She's going to show you who's boss, right? So the son switched the request.
So the father got
so she
right
asked
thing
for chicken soup, and he got chicken soup. So the father says to the son, "My hi, what happened today?" So the son said, "I switched it. I went into the kitchen and I told her the wrong, you know."
Barley.
He says, "You're not allowed to do that."
Because you're switching.
You're not allowed to do that. Yeah. You can't do that to your mother. If I said, you have to report. You're not allowed to do that. That's, yeah, I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome. We're talking about Gedolim. Great people. You're not allowed to do that to your mother. That's between me and her. That's, you know.
Oh, but, would he have been allowed to do it?
Yeah. Asking for chicken soup when indeed he wanted barley soup. That's not what he's going to get.
As long as when he gets the one that she gives, he doesn't say,
I got you.
Right. As long as he just frowns the way he always does and eats his chicken soup. If he frowns. Okay? Very delicate. But Reb Chiya felt, you know, so what? What do you need out of a marriage? The Rambam's description of what's supposed to happen, he doesn't say otherwise divorce. He says this is the way it's supposed to be. People have to focus on what it's supposed to be, not use this as ammunition. You missed the third item on the checklist, so I'm going to be late for supper. It's not a way to run a life.
Well, Rabbi, should try to talk to her and find out why she's... Right? I mean, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
What if she's not amenable? I mean, what if...
So I want to tell you something else.
She's got a chip on her shoulder from the time she was born. And, she, you know, it doesn't matter what he does and what they talk about, and this is what she's
going
to do.
So I want to tell you another thing that colors our perspective in marriage. I won't ask. A Jew once came to the Ari HaKadosh. And he told him, my wife, she abuses me. She screams at me. Very not nice. So the Ari HaKadosh told him that in your previous life, you abused her. And this is your atonement. Grin and
bear it.
So he goes home and he's a changed person. She screams at him, and he doesn't scream back. She yells, she asks him to do things, he does it diligently. And after about 2 days of this, she gets very frustrated. And she asks him, what happened? You used to scream back at me, and now you don't scream at me anymore. And he says, what should I tell you? I went to the Ari HaKadosh, and he told me that, you know, I have this coming to me, and this is my atonement. And I'm not going to scream at you. If this is my atonement, I have to accept it with joy. And this is God's plan for me. She heard this. And she said, well, if this is your atonement, then I'm not going to give you your atonement. So I'm not screaming at you anymore. So he gets really nervous. Uh-oh, he's not going to get his atonement. So he starts running back to the Ari HaKadosh and asks him, what am I going to do? I'm not getting my atonement anymore. And the Ari HaKadosh told him, the moment you accepted, so the atonement was achieved, go enjoy family life. It should be good for you. So a Jew who has a religious upbringing or trains themselves in spiritual seeking is going to hit different types of bumps and challenges, but is not going to react, oh, things aren't going my way, and suddenly, you know, so divorce or scream or yell. There's a whole different perspective that a Jew has of, so this is an opportunity for me to exercise my tolerance muscles. I once heard a person describe marriage, you know, it's 50-50. You know, I wait for her sometimes and she waits for me and I just pay. It's not 50-50. What happens when it becomes 75-25? What happens when one spouse, God forbid, becomes handicapped? So it's 95-5. It's a relationship. And you're here in this world and Hashem knows what He gave you. It's an atonement, it's an achievement. You could have all your fancy words, but the bottom line is we believe that God runs the world. And while there is such a thing as an out of marriage, but it's used very sparingly. It's not something that we go around with that attitude on a regular basis, and certainly not in a rampant approach. It's, for the most part, we believe that the challenges that a person is thrown are things that he's supposed to stand up to the challenge and meet them with patience, with perseverance.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
A very practical one, because it's so applied to me. You know, I have a wonderful second marriage. I'm very happy.
Good.
Wonderful wife. Great son. But if I stayed in my first marriage and tried to work it out, then I would not have what I have now. How to reconcile with the fact that, you know...
We're not saying that divorce is never an option. But our general approach is to avoid it. It's supposed to be used very sparingly. The common trend, the mood in the United States today is that divorce has been legitimized as a viable option. And in the Jewish world, it's not supposed to be a viable option. It's supposed to be a last resort, a special thing. If it just can't happen, so there's a method. I mean, that's true, you know, in all kinds of areas of life. Just because there's an out doesn't mean that you grab it. I mean, everybody who's in business, in legal, I mean, you could go through a contract and you could sit there with a magnifying glass and find something that you could henpeck, and then you realize, yeah, but I'll kill the relationship. You know, I could get another $100 out of him because it says here that he's supposed to cover these costs and those costs, and you know, I could get it out of him, or, you know, there's a certain status quo and it's just moving. Everything in life, you know, you could invoke things and you could drive people crazy, or you can, you know, work with it. So we recommend things are supposed to work smoothly. Do you have an out? Of course you have an out. At the end of every contract it says, you know, litigation should be done according to the laws of the state, and you want, you can take the guy to court. You know, if that's what you want.
Don't let it come to that.
Yeah, but don't let it come to that. You want a healthy business relationship. You want a healthy marriage. You want friends.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an option? It's definitely an option. But we think hard and well before we invoke that option. Good.
So that, did this Rav Chaya have to be a tzaddik, or is this the way everybody's supposed to be?
It's a perspective. The perspective that we're trying to live up to is, let's face it, just because you're married, you are already getting massive blessing. You're getting the sanctity of a Jewish marriage, and you're getting your children raised. A wife would say the same thing in the reverse, you know, whatever she's, in her perspective, I'm getting a roof over my head, he's going out to work, he's providing for me, or whatever, however you're going to word it. But it's related to our principle of how we define happiness. You define it by what you have, not by what you wish. If that other rabbi would define happiness by getting chicken soup when I ask for chicken soup, so then he'd be a very unhappy person. Because that's the one thing in his life that he's not getting. But if he looks at his hundreds of students who love him and have a relationship with him, and his wife, who does do whatever she does do, even though she drives him crazy. And he has nice
she
kids.
She does feed him every night.
She raises the
he
children.
He eats. He's eating. He's not going hungry.
He gets a hot-cooked meal.
That's right.
He can learn to love the opposite of the both soups. Then he doesn't have a problem.
Right?
She is being negative in such a minor detail. Tal v'chomer, wouldn't she carry that on into the rest
We can jump to conclusions. We can jump to conclusions. We don't know. But ultimately, our principle is that a person is capable of following this philosophy to its logical conclusion and maintaining serenity under all circumstances. Now, there will be cases where a person can't live up to these standards. And that's the question. Like any question, there's a standard. and I'm not living up to it, what should I do? You know, it would be very nice if I could have patience with this and that and the other thing, but I don't. What should I do now? People have that question all the time with jobs. You know, if I'd have more patience for my coworkers, then it would be a very nice place because it has a very nice salary. But I don't have patience for these coworkers because the things they do get on my nerves.
But I thought you're not allowed to say, this is the way I am. And I thought you're supposed to improve. Yeah, do
correct.
What you're supposed to do.
Correct, correct. And what happens when a person reaches the point where they recognize, I'm getting angrier than I'm growing spiritually? I'm not handling this challenge. The coworkers are getting on my nerves. I'm supposed to have tolerance. I understand. But I'm not. So we can send you back to the drawing board and say, try again. Or we might tell you at some point that the job's not for you. That has to be a responsible decision. We don't recommend people just dump jobs because, you know, someone rubbed them the wrong way. And in a somewhat similar vein, you don't just drop a marriage because someone rubbed you the wrong way. I mean, it's a basic attitude that you are equipped to handle more than you think. But if in the final analysis you can't, then you have to analyze it and make a responsible decision in consultation with someone you trust.
The other thing, too, is that a different moral of the story of the man who's abuse from his wife was an atonement for his prior abuse of her in a previous life. But the other moral of the story is that even when you're in a situation that looks like it isn't going to change at all, you, by changing your own behavior, can change it much more than you realize is possible.
Good. That's correct. You respond to an insult in a soft way. So, ma'anerach yoshiv chemo, a person who responds softly is the best response to anger. It's very hard to argue with someone who doesn't scream back. It just lowers the tempo, you know.